welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, July 24th, 2017.
It's just going to be devastating in those kinds of families for many young women.
Indiana's Attorney General is appealing a temporary injunction that allows minors to bypass notifying their parents when seeking an abortion. We'll have that story in the show later in the show for today's community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, local artist Lindsay Hine Schroeder talks about her work painting pet portraits to raise money for a local animal hospital. That's on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
In the July 20th meeting of the Monroe County Election Board, Democratic Representative Carolyn Vanderweel sought to reassure voters that Indiana law protects their private information. Vanderweel's statement came after a request last month by the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity asking secretaries of state for an expansive set of information on individual voters, including Hoosiers.
They made a request that all the secretaries of state provide them with information about people's voting records in Indiana, including Social Security numbers, birth dates, political affiliation, and voting history.
Many secretaries of state who are limiting how much information they will turn over to the commission.
Our secretary of state had said she would not provide information to the commission about voter social security numbers, birth dates, political affiliation, or voting history, that the state law only allows us to share voters' names, congressional districts, and addresses. I would like people to be aware that your voting registration is a public record, but there are limitations as to who can access that or how much they can access, and nobody has access to social security numbers or ID numbers.
Monroe County Election Board Republican Representative William Ellis echoed Vanderweel's assertion that voting records are public record, although he stated that the request for voters' Social Security numbers seemed an overreach.
Even though your party affiliation, we don't have party affiliations technically in Indiana, your primary voting record would be, and that is how most political parties do determine party affiliation. And for Indiana state law, that is how your eligibility to run for a political party is determined to be on the ballot. So that would be available. But like Carolyn says, Social Security numbers, and that is redacted even from every type of sales disclosure form when you buy property. So needing that for voting.
Vanderweel said the request for information has prompted voters in many states to cancel their voter registration.
I would point out that that doesn't eliminate the fact that you're already on the public record. So even if you canceled your voter registration, that information would still be available, at least for the next few years, because we're required to keep those things on hand. The only thing that canceling your voter registration is going to do is to make you ineligible to vote in the next election unless you re-register.
Vanderweel suggested that the board may want to develop a policy on what, if any, voter registration lists might be made available through public records requests. Vanderweel volunteers as a news anchor for WFHB.
Pesticide application will temporarily close a portion of the Beeline Trail tomorrow. That's according to the Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department. The stretch of trail between the Bloomington Banquet Sculpture and 7th Street will be rerouted through City Hall's employee parking lot. The pesticide will be focused on weeds growing in the Farmers Market Plaza. If left untreated, they could be a tripping hazard. Community Relations Manager Julie Ramey said the closure will last from 8 a.m. until noon.
The application itself will take, a half hour, 45 minutes, and we are waiting 4 hours to make absolutely sure that the chemical is dry before we open the trail back up for people to use.
According to the Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department, manual removal of the weeds is not an option. Ramey said the roots grow underneath the bricks of the Farmers Market Plaza, and if staff removed the tops of the weeds, the roots would resprout within days. Ramey said all options for weed removal were carefully reviewed.
Parks and Recreation weighs very carefully any opportunities to use pesticides versus other types of control for pests, for vegetation of all kinds, and we're just very careful about it and have a really detailed record of any time we use chemicals in our parks and along our trails. It's something we try to avoid. If we have to use them, we are as careful and as conservative as possible.
Ramey said the application of pesticides is dependent on the weather. If it rains tomorrow, the department stated the closure of the Beeline Trail will be postponed until Wednesday.
Indiana Department of Transportation officials announced they have narrowed down potential avenues for Interstate 69's Ohio River crossing. On Thursday, NDOT officials issued a press release stating that the two routes under consideration in the Evansville area river crossing would call for the demolition of the current Highway 41 twin bridges. According to officials, the western proposed route would largely follow existing Highway 41 and would cost nearly $1 billion to build. The other proposed central route would run through rural areas to the east of John James Audubon State Park. Officials stated that while that route is purportedly cheaper to build, it would significantly affect the local ecology. Mindy Peterson, a spokeswoman for the Indiana and Kentucky State Bridge Group, said the proposed central corridor would have the least impact on homes and businesses. A decision on the bridge route is expected to be announced by fall of next year. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Last month, a U.S. District Court judge granted a temporary injunction on Indiana's new state law allowing judges to notify parents of minor girls who seek abortions. Current Indiana law already says a minor who does not have parental consent for an abortion must petition the court for the right to access the procedure. The new law, which would have gone into effect this month, gives judges the authority to notify a minor girl's parents that she is pursuing the procedure. While Indiana's Attorney General is appealing the recent injunction, some think the new law is unconstitutional. Reporters Arjun Balasundaran and Sarah Vaughn bring us the story for today's Community Report.
Attorney General Curtis Hill announced earlier this month that his office is appealing a district court's order that granted Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky's preliminary injunction, allowing minors the option to choose abortion without parental consent. In a statement, Hill said, quote, "Under this injunction, it's easier for a 14-year-old to get an abortion than to get a tattoo," unquote. Hill further stated that he found it ironic the same people who suggest the adolescent brain isn't fully developed until the age of 25 would also suggest a minor has the mental capacity to choose abortion, a procedure he describes as both emotionally and physically overwhelming. Ken Falk, legal director for Planned Parenthood, defended the district court's decision to grant the preliminary injunction.
A losing party always has the right to appeal an adverse decision. So I'm not going to criticize the state for appealing. However, we believe that the district court's decision is correct, and we are hopeful and optimistic that the Court of Appeals will agree.
Falk also commented on Indiana's abortion laws.
Well, we have a number of challenges against Indiana's abortion laws, ones passed last year and that passed this year. In addition to this case, the state has appealed a preliminary injunction that was entered against it last year concerning the requirement that women obtain ultrasounds at least 18 hours before their abortion. We also won a preliminary injunction last year challenging Indiana's laws that would have prohibited women from obtaining abortions for specified reasons. The state did not appeal, but that case is now pending before the court awaiting a final ruling on a request for judgment.
The Attorney General said the decision to appeal against Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky's preliminary injunction was made to help Hoosier parents defend their right to know what is going on with their teenage child's life. Don Johnson, a professor at Indiana University's Maurer School of Law, offered her insights on the legal battle between the state and Planned Parenthood.
So this is quite a complicated area of law because Indiana already had a law requiring
an underage minor, even a 17-year-old, to get parental consent before having an abortion. That was already the law. And then the state legislature passed additional restrictions on top of that. So what is at issue is in situations where the minor, the young woman, feels she cannot consult her parents and get their permission. This is in like less than 5% of the cases, according to one study the court talked about. The law allows the young woman to go to court and get a court order saying she's mature enough to make her own decision. The Supreme Court has said there needs to be that outlet for young women who cannot get their parents' consent in situations of abuse, parental abuse, neglect, situations where the minor fears for her safety, extreme conditions like that. So we're talking about that small percentage of cases. The new law would have said, even where the judge says the minor, the young woman's mature enough to make her own decision, that the judge in some cases has to tell her parents that she got the court order. And so that is what Planned Parenthood challenged.
Under a provision of law, a minor may obtain an abortion without parental consent by securing a court order stating she is mature enough to make her own decision or that an abortion is in her best interest.
So you have to remember, this is a very small number of cases. The court cited over 95% of the cases, young women get their parents' consent. This is the very small number where they feel they can't, and they go through the onerous obstacle of actually getting to court and getting the court to analyze the situation. They present their situation to a judge. Very intimidating for a young woman to do this. They go through all that and establish to the judge's satisfaction, which is very intrusive of the young woman's privacy as it is, that an abortion is in her best interest or she's mature enough to make her own decision. The judge orders that. Supreme Court has suggested that's the end of it. That's all the hoops you can require the young woman to jump through. But this new law added additional barriers where the judge had to make additional findings before she could proceed. And she risked the judge in those situations of abuse and neglect telling the parents.
Johnson, who has been part of the U.S. Justice Department and served as acting assistant attorney general from 1997 to 1998, cited situations in which parental consent may not be the best option.
And we have to remember that not every family is the ideal family. You know, we're talking about families that are not functioning well. And in recent years, child abuse and neglect proceedings have increased dramatically. Like here in Bloomington, there's been a big increase in the need for CASA advocates for children, tripled in recent years, and in part because of the drug abuse epidemic we're suffering. So we have to remember that these are the kinds of circumstances we're talking about young women being in. You know, it's that minority of cases where requiring notification and parental consent, which we do already without any outlet, is just going to be devastating in those kinds of families for many young women.
Johnson explains why states such as New York, Connecticut, Oregon, Washington, and Vermont, among others, do not require parental consent for abortion.
So a number of states have said we're not going to get in the business of interfering with parental child communications, because we recognize every family has its own challenges, and the best thing we can do is be supportive of healthy families in other ways.
Attorney General Hill, on the other hand, stated that the injunction is an attempt to make the courts the legal guardian for the minor instead of her parents. According to Hill, the injunction gives judges the option to not notify the parents, and according to Hill, the minors would then go through the process of abortion without the support and guidance needed. Johnson explains the impact of the court's order on Indiana.
Well, this law, the judge said, if it's enforced, would be the most onerous in the country. To put on top of a parental consent requirement this additional parental notification of the judicial bypass proceedings is not enforced in any state, and I believe is clearly unconstitutional. Now, the Supreme Court, unfortunately, has been moving to the ideological right and becoming more anti-women's rights and less protective of reproductive rights. And so, especially with the latest confirmation of Judge Gorsuch by Donald Trump, his nominee, instead of President Obama's, the court has, whether they'll, how their rule is not entirely certain, but under the Supreme Court's precedent, this law is clearly unconstitutional. And I'm hopeful that it will be invalidated at every level, because if it's enforced, it would be the worst in the country.
Arjun Balasandram brought us this report. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughan.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference, volunteer.
Hi, my name is Lindsay Hine-Schroeder and I volunteer for WildCare. I've always loved animals, always wanted to help them in whatever way that I can. I love seeing people in the community help them and want to help as well. And I knew that WildCare was around. I knew about it. I knew that they needed money because they just solely are based on donations. And I thought, that's who I want to help. Because these animals, they can't help themselves. They rely on us. And if they don't have us, they're going to be, you know, in some bad shape. 1 year, I just thought, okay, I make things. I'm an artist. I need to help in some way. So I started with ceramic ornaments, hand painting pets for people. And that was the first year. The felt ornaments came maybe 3 or 4 years into the 10 years that we're at now. And that kind of came from, I think, my mom. She taught me how to sew when I was little. And I make up all my own patterns. This year will be year 10 of the ornament sales at my vet hospital. I work at College Mall Veterinary Hospital, and this July I will have been there for 17 years. So for almost 10 years of that, I've been doing the ornament sale. We made $60, and I thought, that's great. That's $60 that this charity did not have. And I felt great about it, and the public was responding to it, you know? And then this past year, we made over $1,000. So that was huge. That was huge for us to be able to donate that kind of money to WildCare, which helps injured, sick, orphaned wildlife in Southern Indiana. It was at one of the WildCare's open houses that they had, a holiday open house. I had a tree. I had all my owl ornaments on it. And all the money went to WildCare from the tree. And this little boy came up, and he was maybe 7 or 8. And he was with his dad. And he said, you know, I want to buy an ornament. And I said, that money goes to WildCare. That money that you're buying that ornament with is going directly to help those animals. And he got this look of joy on his face. And it was just so beautiful to see him make that connection and feel that I'm doing something. I'm helping. Like this little child, and he felt so big. And it was just beautiful. It was just beautiful. So I thought, you know, if I can make a difference with one kid, what can we do with a lot of kids? Let's see what takes off with this. I was born an artist, first and foremost. That's just who I am. I can't help it. It's my passion. It's in my blood. But animals are as well. And I feel like if I can go to work every day and make a difference, that feels wonderful. And then I come home and I'm able to make a difference too. So it feels extra good. Thanks for listening. I am Lindsay Hine-Schroeder, and I volunteer for WildCare.
you may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County. For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three featured volunteer opportunities for the week. Help out with the Back to School Jam, a 3-on-3 basketball tournament at the Crestmont Community on July 29th. 8 volunteers are needed to be court monitors, and a music DJ is also needed to share tunes to make this an event with a beat. Or get trained to officiate at Bloomington Pride's women's middle and high school lacrosse games. Volunteers must be able to jog and sprint to keep up with the play of the game, have personal transportation, and be a high school sophomore or older. Volunteers even receive a stipend for each game officiated. And finally, at the end of the summer season, when Mills Pool is closed for humans, it will remain open for 2 more days of swimming for our canine friends during Drool in the Pool. Volunteers can assist with doggy giveaways and contests and act as dog lifeguards. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake. You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Arjun Balasandaran and Cole Stinson, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, our partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Arjun Balasandaran and Sarah Vaughn.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Michael Glab. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Kiteline, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.